welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Jedi Zog, and on the other side, John English, the Germs guy. We're here for episode 10. We're to 10, John. We are to 10.
We're ahead of most podcasts, then.
I'll take it.
You ever surf the podcast channel and something looks interesting and you're like, oh, there's only four episodes from 2008. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, and I'll even go back through my Stitcher, and there's a few folks that I, you know, few podcasts that I subscribe to and follow that probably don't post very often and are on episodes 4 and 5. And yeah, no, I'm the same way. So how you doing tonight, my friend?
Doing pretty good. I always like Tuesdays because I'm not Monday anymore.
This is true. It is no longer Monday. It is now, actually, we're almost to hump day. So, all right, what do we want to talk about tonight?
Well, I think tonight's going to be a Gordon Hayward-centric episode. For the first time in his career, he scored 30 points back-to-back. He's been having a really strong showing lately. Over the last 10 games, he scored at least 24 points in 8 of those. And as we're looking at injuries pile up in the West, it made me think, just how far away is Hayward from making the All-Star team?
It's a good question. How far? I mean, what did your results bring?
Well, there's a couple guys I think is ahead of him, and I do that not only numbers-wise, but also maybe politically.
Okay.
Like, if you wanted, say there's another injury, and you had to bring in another person. I think the committee would say there's no one from the Mavericks. But the best player on the Mavericks this year is Monta Ellis, and Monta Ellis just got injured. So they could decide to go ahead and put Dirk in one more year, but Dirk hasn't really been having an all-star year. He's been having a good year, but his numbers look more like Derek Favors this year. So I don't know.
So you're saying I'm trying to find the right word to describe it, but from a, sentimental value, then Dirk would be the guy that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. That would be it for sentimental reasons. I mean, he's still playing great. I think he's like 18-6 this year, something like that, but it's just not quite the Dirk of old.
Right.
And so if Monta wasn't available, then I don't really think Dirk could get in for sentimental reasons. I also look at the Grizzlies. I think the Grizzlies have a couple guys you can make arguments for. I mean, Marc Gasol made it. That was a no-brainer. But Mike Conley and Zach Randolph are also really key to their winning ways right now. And Conley, maybe his individual numbers don't jump out at you. He's 17.4 points, 5.4 assists, 1.2 steals. But Zach Randolph, he might be leading the league in rebounds this year. He's at 12.1 rebounds a game, and along with his 16.8 points. And so they might look at the Grizzlies' record and those numbers and decide to have one of those guys come along.
And I would think that would make more sense than the sentimental value for Dirk, simply because the Grizzlies are quietly going about their business. They're the number two seed in the West. They're playing extremely well. In fact, if anything, they're challenging Golden State for the number one seed, would be my argument. So I would have to agree with you there. One of those guys would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and Dallas has kind of leveled off lately. They've gone 5-5 over the last 10, so they're having their issues, and it's not going to be easier for them with Ellis and Chandler. And I haven't heard how long either of them is supposed to be out, but if I remember right, both of them, it doesn't look like either of them are going to be playing against the Jazz.
So,
that's the last game before the All-Star break, so I could see Dallas just resting those two guys no matter what their injuries are.
Right. So back to the All-Star thoughts for a minute, though. I'm curious, just your opinion, and this is something I'm stewing in my head. What are the needs on the All-Star team is really what where the question comes down to, because obviously arguments initially were that Damian Lillard got snubbed, and then he turns around and gets in, you know, because of injury. My question is, obviously the coaching staff makes the decisions here. What is Steve Kerr's thinking, you know, and is Gordon Hayward maybe an option purely because they would need it?
That could be. It depends on who would get in next. Like they got another big man with DeMarcus Cousins. They got another point guard with Damian Lillard. So, you know, depending on who the injury comes to, like, let's see. As I'm looking at this, I believe all those guys are healthy. LaMarcus Aldridge, seems like I keep hearing about him. He's having some kind of lingering issue right now. I think that it looked like he was going to miss some time and he decided to play through his injuries.
Yes. And I don't remember what the injury was, but yes, that was something that he's re-aggravated, I think.
Yeah, I think it was something with his finger or something, and he's just going to play through it. It seems like it was something like that. So he's still healthy right now and he's playing, and if he would be the most likely, I would say, might aggravate something. But say if he went down, no. I remember. Anthony Davis is injured, so they might have to replace him.
Oh, good point.
So, they have enough big men without Anthony Davis because they got Mark Gasol, they got Tim Duncan, they got DeMarcus Cousins.
Right.
They don't necessarily need a four or a five. They could go with a three. Well, now, if you're looking at that, I would say let's just look at front court competition. So I would say maybe Mike Conley's not next. Maybe Eric Bledsoe's not next. But, you know, then Gordon's main competition would be Zach Randolph and Dirk.
Right. No, that's a good point. My other thought too is, what does the wing situation look like? Because they've got Klay Thompson, they've got Kevin Durant. Help me out here because I'm not.
There aren't really any threes.
No, there aren't any threes.
Durant's a three, pretty much. He's a three or a four. James Harden's pretty locked in as a. He's a two, but he handles the ball a lot for a two.
Right.
Klay Thompson's a two. Yeah, I don't see any real small forwards on the team.
Which is why, in my assessment, Gordon would make more sense than, say, Zach Randolph or Dirk Nowitzki. Because Zach isn't necessarily a shoe-in for that three spot. He likes to play the power forward a little bit more, and I'm not sure even if he'd fit on the floor as a three. So you would think next would have to be Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, we're picking ideas here, and I'd have to pick the brain of Steve Kerr to see what he wants. But all right, so that's the All-Star talk. John, you wanted to jump next into the trade deadline.
Yeah, we've only got about a week left before the trade deadline, and the Jazz have a lot of assets right now, and they are okay with losing this year to develop their assets, but you've got to think that the goal is playoffs next year. So is there a move you think they're going to make in February, or you think they're going to stand pat and wait till summer?
If I go off of past years, my initial gut feeling says they're going to stand pat. There's a couple of trades I think on the team that would make sense if they could pull the trigger on, but I just don't see it happening. Cantor would be the first person, the most valuable on the trade block that I think would make the most sense. I still don't know, and not I don't know that I believe that anything will take place.
Yeah, here's the decision they have to make with Cantor. If they trade him, they can trade him to a team that would feel good about re-signing him because he'll be a restricted free agent, or feel good about just giving him the qualifying offer and just really testing him out for that year and a half. And I would think the first scenario is more likely than the second scenario. If the Jazz want to move Cantor, they are better off doing it now.
Right.
If they get to summer, he could get some outrageous offer that they don't want to match, and you lose Cantor for nothing.
Do you see that happening?
I see it as a very real possibility.
Okay.
And, you know, one reason we let Millsap walk away is because we had Cantor, and we really wanted to see what Cantor could become.
Right.
And so if you're going to let the asset walk away that you let your future all-star walk away for, then you're really just, you're just gathering assets and giving them away for nothing. So I think they either, if they don't trade Cantor this February, then they need, then it tells me that they're more likely looking at him as a longer term solution. If he just signs the 1 year thing this summer, then, if I remember right, then that means they can't trade him without his consent. So that he'll therefore be a lot harder to trade, even if they have him next year.
Right.
So then at that point, their second best scenario for the Jazz is if they don't trade him this month, then they'll want to give him some kind of extension in the summer. And then if they still don't feel good about him next year, then they can try trading him away when he has 2 or 3 years more on a contract. But that would actually be easier for them to get something in return.
Right.
So I view their most favorable options as Cantor gets traded this month, or second option, Cantor gets extended. Anything after that just probably isn't going to work out too well for the Jazz.
Right.
Now, when you look at this year and looking at how it's going to springboard to next year, you got to ask yourself, what are they doing to get ready to become a playoff team next year? And so that means this summer they can go after some free agents, but they also need to make sure that they have an appealing supporting structure, that a free agent will look at the situation and believe that when I walk into this situation, we're going to win. Jazz have a disadvantage when it comes to attracting free agents, and it's been easier for them to trade to get those pieces. So then you come back to this trade deadline. Are they... Because here's what I think. I think the Jazz it'll be worth it to them if they make a trade that can improve the team, and maybe that changes our first round pick from the 6-7 range, and we wind up landing more in the 9-10 range. I think they're just fine with that if the trade we've made, if the other pieces we've added in the trade has made us that much better, that the playoffs are that much more attainable next year. So I can definitely see them doing something. When I look at it as a whole over the past 25 years, yeah, I could see them standing pat. But this draft isn't as deep as last year's. Doesn't have as much potential. I mean, there are some guys I'm really starting to enjoy in the top 3 or 4 picks, but after that, you know, then we're more like the 2012 draft.
So here's a scenario to throw at you, a question. I saw this go across Twitter, and I don't generally entertain a lot of rumors and thoughts like this, but this one intrigued me. You were talking about, say, they let Cantor, you know, walk, and the only reason they let him walk in the offseason and they don't match is because maybe they have their eyes on a free agent that they could bring. Here's one free agent I've seen come up, and it's been actually discussed with a few people that we know and respect, and that is Paul Millsap's not under contract after this year. What's the likelihood the Jazz pursue him, and the thought process is let Cantor walk and bring Millsap back?
I think that is a very good possibility. He would be someone who would get us back in the playoffs. He knows what it's like here. I think they can make a really good pitch to him. They could say, look, we had to let you go so we could be bad and get some lottery draft picks, but now we're ready to win again. The downside in pursuing Millsap is, do you have Favors come off the bench now? Does Rudy remain a bench player? What is your front court going to look like? Are you going to try to slide Gordon to the two and maybe have Millsap play the three?
And then if you do that, now you've got Burks coming off the bench, or, you know, and Burks' development is now back to square one again. Not that it won't be already anyway, but no, you're right. You're right. That is an interesting. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. So I do like Millsap, and I do think he's going to be one of the guys they pursue. But there are going to be a few teams pursuing Millsap, and while I think he will listen to the Jazz just as politely as he will to everybody else, you know, you kind of got a feeling that last year that he wasn't really happy with how things were going under Ty. Didn't really feel like the franchise was supporting him. I mean, they like him, but he felt like when the draft canter and they have Favors, and it just kind of feels like they're trying to edge him out to have him move his job, and thinking maybe we need to move Millsap to the bench. He left here and he went to Atlanta and he lived up to his potential. And, you know, if we had a better coach than Ty, maybe something Millsap could have had some of that here. And that's another reason why I think the Jazz have a decent shot at getting Millsap back, is Quinn Snyder's here and he likes Snyder. He's worked with him before.
Right.
But, you know, Atlanta has a great pitch to keep them. They're the best team in the East. So, you know, I don't know how eager he is going to be to leave the team that believes in him and that he made the All-Star team on him.
There's a couple of caveats, or one caveat, can't even pronounce right. And then the other is a plus. First of all, the plus: if you bring Millsap back, you now have the stretch four that you were hoping with Cantor, but with Millsap, because Millsap can hit that open, lengthy jump shot that I think is still somewhat up and down with Cantor, and you don't know when you're going to get it and when you won't, including that three-point shot. But the caveat that I bring up is, and this is why the Jazz, although they would be in position, it makes me wonder, Paul Millsap is currently making $9.5 million. You know, he's eligible for a pay raise, and that could be in the $12 to $15 million range. One, can the Jazz afford him? Two, would Atlanta be able to afford him? And three, you know, and to both of those, who out there is going to offer him a big contract that neither Atlanta or the Jazz are going to be able to even bring in? Because he's unrestricted. He can sign with whoever he wants.
Yeah. For one thing, Millsap's going to get $15 million.
Yeah.
So whoever's him, it's going to be for $15 million. So Atlanta can do that. There are other teams that'll go after him. Like, I could see Boston going after him. Who are some other Eastern teams? Maybe even Chicago could go after him. They might say, like Taj as our sixth man. Let's see if we can't get Millsap. I mean, there's a few different places.
Indiana could even do so. You bring him in there and go in there with Paul George. That's not a bad option.
Indiana, yeah. New York. New York's going to have a ton of cap space.
Right.
Mavericks are going to have cap space. You know, there's a few teams that are going to have cap space, and they're going to be appealing destination.
Exactly.
I'm trying to remember if now, let's see. Golden State wouldn't have any camp. Lakers could go after him. Lakers are going to have a ton of cap space.
Right. I don't know. So, they will.
You know, there's going to be a lot of summer, so that you just have to be thinking about that when they're trying to look at what they want to do.
Yes, exactly. Which goes back to Cantor. There are a lot of variables. Cantor, if he plays better the rest of the season, you know that's going to spike his return come off season. So somebody could give him an offer sheet that the Jazz just can't match. You're right. There's a lot of variables and factors that go into play. and Cantor's in a good position in the Jazz. Jazz have some decisions to make.
Yeah, as I'm looking at these teams where Paul could go, any team where Paul could go, Cantor could go.
Right.
And Cantor's not going to get 15, but there could be teams willing to go. You know, he's 22 years old. He's a 6'11 power forward center who can score. Maybe he just couldn't learn defense in Utah, but here we can fix him. You know, and I see Cantor getting like someone offering him a 3-year, 30, 4-year, $40 million deal.
Right.
Which seems a little nuts, but they're playing into his potential, and he has definite potential.
Well, and he's already showing a spike in the direction of that potential, both offensively and defensively. He's getting better on both ends of the floor, and that's only going to bode well for him.
Yeah, I could see Cantor being like Kufis, where he's just not quite where you want him to be when he's there, but as soon as he leaves, that gradual improvement still happens every year. And now Kufis is like a really coveted backup center.
Right. And the one guy that hurts you where you don't want him to hurt you? Yeah, that guy.
Well, so. See, now the NBA is just riddled with ex-Jazz players that hurt us, so.
Right? No, I agree.
That's true. Everywhere.
Well, look at it. The Atlanta's got how many of those Jazz players are headed to the All-Star team now, right?
Yeah, any team with at least three ex-Jazz players, they become the new Jazz. So now the Chicago Jazz are no more, but now you have the Atlanta Jazz and the Charlotte Jazz. Anyone else want some Jazz players? Because I'm sure Darren Williams wishes we could get a couple more up there, but
yeah,
that ain't quite add up.
All right, what else you want to cover?
Well, they're going into Dallas, and Dallas doesn't have Monta Ellis or Tyson Chandler, most likely. Do you think they win that game?
Dallas has not proven to be the best place for us right now, but yeah, with the way the Jazz have been playing as of late, yeah, I think they can. If Gordon Hayward's coming.
Oh, and Rondo's out. I forgot about that.
And Rondo hasn't proven to be the best addition for Dallas yet.
He hasn't, but Dallas had to get their bench to get Rondo.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. So if Dallas doesn't have Rondo, Ellis, or Chandler, and their bench is thinner because of that trade, and Gordon's playing the way he's playing, I think the Jazz have a chance. Now, Dallas just killed the Jazz. I think they've met twice and
yes,
lost
they have.
Badly both games. Yep. So
they were down by at least 25 in both games.
Yeah, I went to one of them, and it was just kind of painful to watch.
But you know, Gordon wasn't at the level he is right now, and the entire landscape of the Jazz has changed since then. I mean,
yeah, we didn't have Elijah Millsap.
Gobert wasn't at the level he is right now either.
Yeah. I was being a little cheeky, but Millsap's actually a pretty good wing defender, so I'm really happy with him.
No, I enjoy having Millsap, so. But we'll no.
Probably won't have Joe Ingles.
Right.
Won't have Rodney Hood. So it'll be one of those where both teams are hurt.
Well, and if the track record of Trey of late works out the way it does, you know Trey's going to have another. I suspect he'll have a big game. He didn't last night. He did the game before. He didn't the game before. If it continues like that, Trey's due for another big game. So if you get 30 out of Hayward, Trey has another big night, and Derek Favors, you know, continues his steady play down low. No, the Jazz have a very good chance of pulling out that victory.
You know, I saw somebody pointing this out on Twitter earlier today.
Pointing us?
I can't remember who. No, it might have been Andy Larson, or I don't remember who it was, but they were talking about how Gordon's been playing really well as of late and scoring really well.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, I wonder how much of that has to do with Trey moving to the bench.
Yes. Yes.
But Trey shoots a lot. Now that he's the scoring option in the second unit, it means a little more scoring responsibilities on Gordon's shoulders in the first unit, because Dante is not much of a scorer right now. And Joe's a very unselfish too. So with Trey going to the bench, that does mean more opportunities for Hayward and Favors to put up some scoring numbers.
Right. No, and I jumped in on that conversation with Andy too, because I was at work this morning and a friend brought it up. And actually before Andy even brought it up to me, but Andy said he found it out there on a forum. Somebody else had pointed it out. So he didn't even take credit for it, but it's true. And I started thinking, you know, I'm going to have to watch more closely, but it's very true, which also leads to my thought, how different would the landscape be with Alec Burks on the team? Because I mean, if Alec Burks was back on the team in the starting lineup, how many possessions does that take away from Hayward? Now, granted, you can go back to when the Jazz started playing well at the end of December and Gordon and Burks were both playing at a high level together on the court, and who knows? But no, I agree, and I don't think it's any fault to Burks either, because I think Burks, all he ever does is exactly what the coach tells him to do. Take shots, make shots, pass, you know, it's all within the offensive flow. But without those extra possessions going to other players in the starting lineup, no, I think there is something to be said of Hayward getting more touches and getting more opportunities.
Yep.
So, in the fourth quarter, he was more assertive last night than I've seen him in a long time. And I think part of that was he just got tired of getting to the hole and never getting the calls. And I think finally he just took it upon himself that said, look, I'm just going to make this happen, whether the refs give it to me or not. I don't know.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite games of Hayward to watch, to just watch him determined to not lose. And it reminded me of, we've watched games where Millsap was like that, where Darren Williams was like that. And then of course the old days all the time, Carl and John were like that, where they're just like, there's no way I'm letting us lose this game.
Right.
And he just took it upon himself, and he just willed the team to victory. It was really fun to watch.
Let me ask you a question. I know we're probably running short on time, but how often this season, and I want to know because something I've thought about, but how often this season have you watched in the fourth quarter where you've either said to yourself or out loud to Hayward, please, just take over, just go. And last night we watched it happen. So, I mean, because I've sat there in the season watching him in the fourth quarter defer to the offensive play, to pass the ball, to do exactly what Quinn expects in the offense to work and the flow work the way it does. And there's been a few times where I've just looked at Hayward and said, look, that particular play, you had your defender beat. You could have gotten to the hoop. Instead, you chose to pass within the offense, and the right pass, you made the right play. Trey took the shot, or Gobert or whoever it was ended up with an option at the basket to shoot, but you had the option ahead of time and chose to defer. And there's a few times I wish he had. Last night he didn't, and I'm glad he didn't. For once, I saw something that I think Hayward's needed to do for a while now.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with how the game's going. I mean, the guards struggled all game, and they all knew that. And there in the fourth, one thing Hayward did is he was usually the one to bring the ball up in the fourth quarter. He'd bring it up and he'd get the offense going, and he'd decide, am I going to run ISO or am I just going to start into one of our pass arounds? But he made a lot of the decisions there in the fourth to get that win.
No, I agree.
And I think he had 8 assists last night. So he just, you know, he was doing everything.
Well, when you look at the 20, how much of it came in the second half? I think he only had 3 or 4 first half points. So 26, 27 of that came in the second half. So he did not have, at one point in time, I think he had scored 21 of this 24 in that second half. So I think, I think he only had 3 points at halftime or 4 points at halftime. So, All right. I know you got to go. It's about that time. Anything else you wanted to drop in, cover before we call it a night?
I'll give you one last question.
Okay.
Since it looks like George Karl's taking over the Kings, do you think Ty Corbin ever gets another head coaching job?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I believe he will. Devin and I had a conversation the other day. I still don't think Ty has been put in the right situation yet. I don't know that. I think the situation he was put in Sacramento was not of his doing. It was, Sacramento was on the downslide as it was. And heck, I tend to wonder if George Karl can make things work for DeMarcus Cousins. I still can't watch that guy play without getting frustrated at just how good he is and how mentally just lost he is. So no, I still believe that there's a job out there that will work for Ty. I just don't think it's his time yet.
I think the Kings situation was probably unfair, but the Kings were not that bad when they fired Malone. They were 11-13. And when they handed it to Ty, their defensive numbers just plummeted. And so did their record. And Ty, you know, it's unfair that both of his head coaching jobs started mid-season.
Right.
You know, he should really be able to start as a coach somewhere in the off-season and have a say in doing what he wants to do. I think the main indictment against Ty was the 2013 season where he could not get... where he hadn't won a playoff game the year before, but it was a shortened season. And then the next year... the Jazz winning percentage is actually a little bit worse, and they missed the playoffs. So then after that, the front office goes, all right, this isn't working. So they blow up the team and see what Ty can do with no assets. And, you know, Jazz had the worst defense in the league last year. So between that and his brief stint with the Kings, I think it's going to be very hard for him to get that third head coaching opportunity. I think he'll still be an assistant somewhere easily, really. But head coach again, I don't know. I think a lot of the people will say he's had two chances, and in both chances, they were losing efforts.
I love having these conversations with you. Because we had this very conversation, what, the end of the season, last season, almost? Going back and forth about Ty, and you and I have the same conversation about Trey. So there's, you know, we both have a difference of opinions on both, and that's all right. So I my thoughts on Ty, he's a player's coach more than anything. And I think he has to be in the right situation with a group of players that, one, are capable of playing defense, because maybe their defensive numbers plummeted, but I don't know that you can really give me a name of a guy on Sacramento that's an average or above average defender, because I just don't believe it's there. And I think that was the same problem he ran into with Al Jefferson and whatnot here. I'm not going to make excuses for the guy, but I just believe that there's going to be the right situation where he's going to come into with players that just need a little extra, you know, understanding from a coach who's going to help him get over the hump. Maybe something that's a winning organization rather than a situation where the team has been on a spiral downward in both situations where he ended up.
Yeah, but what front office guy is going to want to be the one to give that chance? Because if you're a winning team, would you risk giving it to Ty to see if he just didn't have a fair situation? And if you're not a winning team, you don't bring in Ty to be your savior. So I just have a hard time picturing a front office making that decision to give them another chance.
Yeah, I would if I was, but there again, that's why I'm on the Jedi and Germs show and why I'm not a front office GM guy. Because I probably wouldn't last. So... but
that would be fun.
Yes, it would.
Just for 1 year, just to have some kind of job like that.
Yeah. So, again, thanks for the question. That's a good question and a good way to call it a night. So, unless you have anything else you want to talk about, I know you wanted to close us up. So, does that cover us?
Yeah, I think we're good.
All right. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was just gonna say, Jeff, have one more game, and then we have the All-Star break, and we have three Jazz players who are going to be in the Rising Stars Challenge, USA versus World.
Yes, we do.
So we can root for both teams and be happy either way.
And Trey is going to be in the skills.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So
Trey will be defending his skills title,
yep.
And then he'll also be representing the world in the Rising Stars Challenge, and Dante and Rudy on the other side. I like it when there's Jazz guys involved. It gives me something to watch during the All-Star break. So,
yep.
We can't have anyone in the All-Star team. I'm glad they're going to be there in other ways.
I agree. I want to see Rudy dominate.
Yeah.
So, all right. All right, everybody. Wraps up episode 10 of the Jedi and Germs Show on the Jazz. We want to thank you all for listening. You can find us on Twitter. John is at germsguy, myself at JediZog, or the handle for the show at Jedi and Germs. We hope to talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us for yet another episode. And John, as always, you get to take us out.
Bye, everybody.